Blog Talk Radio.
Wrestling exhibition requires discretionary viewer participation.
And we are here on Wrestling Road Stories with Jim Valley. Thank you for joining me. Hey, we are recorded today. Unfortunately, we couldn't make it happen. However, thank you for joining me. It's Jim Valley on Wrestling Road Stories, and we are here. We're here on tape. It is Wednesday, and it is Wrestling Road Stories, but we're here on tape, and that's because I needed to get Austin Idol on today. And we do have Austin Idol on today, so that's going to be very exciting. And we're going to talk about the memory of the late, great Lance Russell, who died last week, the Memphis wrestling legend. So sit tight, stay right there, and we're going to remember Lance Russell through the eyes of Austin Idol. And not only that, I'm going to play a 2016 interview that I did with Lance Russell that was just done late last year, the middle of last year, I think, at Cauliflower Alley. So a little less than a year and a half old, talking about his history, Memphis wrestling, all kinds of things. I'm really proud of it. I hope you will enjoy it. But stand by. We'll get the Universal Heartthrob on the air, and we will talk to Austin Idol here. Coming up, it's Wrestling Road Stories. It's Jim Valley. Thank you so much for being here as we remember the late, great Lance Russell.
I'm Wade Keller, editor and publisher of the Pro Wrestling Torch newsletter and former host here at PW Torch Livecast. If you're looking for my shows, they have moved as of July 2017. They're now called the Wade Keller Pro Wrestling Podcast, available through Podcast One. Enter Wade Keller on your podcast app or iTunes and subscribe to the new Wade Keller Pro Wrestling Podcast, where I cover Raw and my first show of the week, SmackDown with my second show of the week, and then the Flagship Edition with a co-host, and we cover a broad array of pro wrestling current events, and then I end the week with a weekly interview. That's the Wade Keller Pro Wrestling Podcast, now at Podcast One. Subscribe today. Just search Wade Keller.
It's Jim Valley. We are here on Wrestling Road Stories Wednesday. Tribute to Lance Russell. And right now we're going to get on the line the one and only Universal Heartthrob, the men's regret. Don't get that wrong. Anyway, talking about the memories of the legendary Lance Russell, who was just passed away last week. But Austin, are you there, man?
I am here. Are you there?
I am here. I'm so glad you're here. Thank you for joining me. It really means a lot because, you know, obviously I didn't have the relationship that you had with Lance Russell, but I was able to meet him and interview him at the 2016 Cauliflower Alley Club. And what a nice man. I mean, even though I didn't really know him, he exudes all of that kindness and goodness that so many people talked about. What were your first impressions of Lance Russell? Did you see him on TV, or did you meet him in person your first time in Memphis?
Yeah, I met him in person, Jim, when I first went to Memphis for the very first time. But you know, I kind of have to laugh in a way because the way you described him just then, I'm listening to you and I'm thinking, Jim Valley's not talking about anybody in the wrestling business, is he? Oh, such a nice, genuine, you know, forthright. Yeah, that's humor, okay? Maybe British humor?
I was thinking about that. You know, he may be. You know, certainly there have been nice people in the wrestling business, but usually they fail or quit or wash out. But he may be the nicest, most successful person also in the wrestling business.
Yeah, I mean, the thing about Lance was, you know, what you saw on TV was really Lance Russell. I mean, that's the Lance walking the street, you know, and that he was just an amazing guy, you know, Jimmy. And I think back about all those years I was going in and out of Memphis, you know, it was, you know, 99% of it was just on a part-time gig, you know, which was a great gig, and we've talked about it. It's been a long time, but you know, I really don't believe that I ever had any discussion with Lance where there was any discontent or there was any kind of a point there where of any confrontation or anything. I mean, I don't recall anything. I mean, I really don't. And that says a lot when you've done business with anybody and probably in any business for any great length of time, you know, but he was just such a genuine guy, you know, and he was like your next door neighbor. I mean, that's who you'd want to have. That's who you'd want to have for a next door neighbor, really. He's just a sweet guy, just a sweet guy.
You know, this just brought in my mind one of the things Jerry Jarrett talks about in his book and in the interview with Lance Russell coming up. I talk about his kind of falling out with Jerry Jarrett when Lawler tried to make his move. And, you know, in Jerry's mind, he couldn't punish anybody but Lance. And Lance was really upset about that. And I don't know, in my mind, you know, I get that business is business sometimes and business is what it is. But to punish Lance Russell, that just seems – it seems like he should have been above it as well to me.
Well, you know – we all have emotions, and sometimes we lose control of those emotions, and we'll say things or do things that we regret, and that applies to everybody. And start with me, you know, I'll take the first step forward on that one, Jim. And you know, it was a move though for Lance. It was a career move, you know, and I've never faulted anybody for that. And if they ever have an opportunity to make a vertical career move, it's, you know, it's going to be better for them. Oh man, I just say I give them my blessings, and I mean I've done it. Sure, I've done it. Did it so many times in wrestling. You know, the opportunity knocks, and you know, sometimes it doesn't knock a second time. So you have to jump through that door.
How would you contrast working with Lance Russell? I mean, you worked with three great announcers that I know of, Lance, Solly, and Charlie Platt. How would you compare and contrast working with Lance versus other announcers in your day?
Well, Lance was casual. He was so casual, and he didn't have all that technological prowess, you know, about all the, like a Gordon Solly did, because that was, you know, that was the, Florida was that amateur thing, you know what I mean? All the great, I mean, so many great amateurs went through there, and that area was built on, it really was built on the guys that had that great amateur backgrounds, and they did, you know, between the Briscoe brothers and Bob Roop and Matt Suda, and God knows, I mean, I'm sure I'm forgetting a lot of guys, you know, but just to name a few of them. So Gordon, you know, he had all the technological jargon, you know, the Salto, you know, Cornish hike, sit out in the switch, you know, double arm lock, wrist lock, whatever. And Lance, you know, he knew a little bit of that stuff, but he really didn't need to know it. I mean, he really didn't need to know it. And he was just a smooth operator, you know what I mean? He was just like silk. He was a smooth operator, and he just, his delivery, you know, I mean, he could have sold anything, I believe, in turn, it would, and people would have bought it. I mean, because he was so smooth, Jimmy. I mean, and people loved the guy. I mean, they loved him. The audience loved him, the way he came across and resonated with the television audience, and really the way he resonated with the talent, you know, yours truly. So just smooth. Charlie Platt was good. I think Charlie was very good. And I think Charlie picked up a lot from Gordon Solly. And Gordon was great. I mean, he was awesome. He was, I mean, gosh, they were all three of those guys you mentioned were all very, very good in their own right. But Lance was the next door neighbor, and he was warm and fuzzy and cuddly, and people loved that.
One of the things I think he did great is he explains the psychology, I think, better than Gordon and better than Charlie. You know, so if you were in the ring with a a member of Rough and Ready or whomever in the ring on a TV match, you know, he would explain that one of the reasons you were dominating is because, you know, whomever is inexperienced. Or if, you know, if you had that famous chain match with Jerry Lawler where Jerry pulled out the short chain and clocked you in the match, you know, he would explain how Jerry was able to outsmart you. And I think it was a way where he was able to explain to the entire family watching wrestling, whether they were huge fans or just casual fans, he was able to explain that psychology, I think, really well in a very plain spoken and layman's terms that anybody could understand.
Smart. Very, very smart, because no doubt about it, that's an art form. I mean, that level of communication, how you can get a message over and hit everybody. That's really smart. That's a great point that you just mentioned there, because you take Gordon, and I love Gordon, but you know, Gordon with all that technology, I mean, a lot of people out there, they don't have an amateur background. They've never been to an amateur wrestling. They don't know anything about amateur wrestling. You know, they're not going to get that. They're not going to understand that. But with Lance, you could definitely understand him, no matter, you know, if you're a Harvard grad or, you know, if you just barely got out of kindergarten like me.
Now, you were obviously a great talker, but even the best of us have moments where, I don't know, maybe you just you slept in or it was just an off day. Was there ever a time I saw Lance, you know, help like a young Rick Rude in his interviews that comes to mind? Was there ever a time where, you know, even the great Universal heartthrob needed a little help from Lance Russell?
I don't think so. You know, I mean, I'm not being braggadocious, but no, I don't think so. I mean,
yeah, I can't think of one either.
I mean, really, because, I mean, maybe, but it could be, you know, but, you know, I was a lucky guy, Jim, you know, when I really got my, it wasn't my first break, but it was an important break there in 73 in New York when Vince Sr. was alive and it was the WWF and when Lou Albano was my manager. I mean, man, you know, I was around some serious talent then. I mean, these guys were rap masters. I mean, they would be rap masters in today's world. They'd be unbelievable, I think, in today's world. I mean, they were great then. But, you look at Albano, the Guiding Light, the Captain, the Grand Wizard. I mean, all those guys could cut those interviews, those promos, like they were in their sleep. I mean, Freddie, Blassie, Curtis Iaukea. I mean, it just goes on and on and on. So I was a lucky kid. I was around all that, so when I had an opportunity, that red light came on, bang, I was off to the races.
What about, you know, obviously we'll talk about the live studio with Lance and stuff, but also, you know, after the show or on the road, you had to cut promos for Louisville and Idleville and all of those places with Lance. Was he pretty much a one-take guy with you?
Pretty much, yeah. He sure was. And we would do those promos on Monday nights prior to the matches in Memphis. So yeah, we would do those for Louisville, Evansville, Lexington. It was Lance. Yeah, we just bang, go. I mean, hit it and go. Yeah. One takers for the most part, you know, Jimmy, one takers, you know, not reduce, you know, do it again. Sometimes everybody screws up, you know, they get tongue twisted or whatever, including myself, you know, it'd be like a blooper.
I think something,
but, you know,
okay.
Uh-huh. No, but again, you know, we're not reading the script from scripts either, you know, so man, you got to do improv, you know, like you and I are doing right now. There's no script here.
Without a net. I think all three, Gordon, Charlie, and Lance did, they brought a certain credibility and a certain groundedness to some of the craziness that happens in professional wrestling, and they would react how you would expect the audience to react. Like, Like, for example, you know, your famous angle with Jerry Lawler, where you were Diamante Negro, and Lance was, you know, Lance played it off, you know, incredibly straight, even though it was a bit of a surreal experience.
Yeah, he did. I mean, that was a moment. it was a moment, and you know, people still talk about that. You know, it was pretty cool. You know, sometimes you're doing something that really has a little bit of significance, and of course, you don't really, maybe you don't realize that, hey, this thing could last for a while. You know, it may be memorable, and that turned out to be memorable because people still talk about it, especially up there in the Mid-South area where it all went down, you know. But Lance was unbelievable in that whole, everybody was, you know. I mean, Jerry Lawler, myself, I think everybody was great with that deal, you know, and it's all improv, you know, which is the cool thing. Live TV too, you know, that was live TV.
Yeah, I mean, it just, when I sit there and I watch some of his stuff on YouTube and things, it just, like you said, that's the buzz. He was very genuine. What about after the famous hair match where you and Tommy Ray and Paulie Dangerously are in your dressing room in the Mid-South Coliseum? Was there any preparation for that, or was that also just ad lib the way it was seen on TV?
Yeah, no prep whatsoever. Nothing whatsoever. I mean, we knew Lance was going to come into the dressing room. We knew that. That's all we knew. There was nothing else. And then when he did, and he tried to get a few words in, but it didn't happen.
And I think it's the Diamante Negro and the hair match in the dressing room. I think his reactions are appropriate. Had he been too over the top and, you know, chewing the scenery in the theater vernacular, I think it could have killed those segments and killed your heat.
You think it could have?
Yeah, I think it could have. If he was, you know, a little more overreacting, say like a Gene Okerlund could be sometime, you know, too much.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I mean, you're talking about being theatrical. Yeah, oh, absolutely. Yeah. And that wasn't Lance. I mean, that, you know, that was not Lance's style. You know, it really wasn't. But you're right. Yeah, if he'd come in there with like a Gene Okerlund thing, it would have really come off like, oh, no, not one of those deals. Come on.
Right.
No, not one of those. Yeah, exactly. So he knew his place, and he knew it well, and he was a master at what he did. He really was. You're great. Absolutely great.
Is there a moment that you always remember when you think of Lance Russell?
Oh, gosh. There's probably a lot of them, Jim. A lot of them, but I mentioned this the other day, the last, and I think I'm right about this, but I believe the last time I saw Lance, actually saw him, spoke with him, was in a shopping mall in Florida. Years ago, you know, it was years ago, I don't know, 15 years ago, 12, 15 years ago, something like that. And I was at I was goofing around in the mall one day, and I heard someone say Austin Idol, and I turned around, and there stood Lance Russell. Yeah, and I said, Lance, Austin. I gave him a big hug, and we talked a little bit, and I asked him, so what are you doing here? Lance, he said, well, I'm retired. So maybe it was 20 years ago, Jim, I don't know. And he said, I'm retired, and I live over in Gulf Breeze, Florida, which was only about, you know, 3, 4, 5 miles from my home. And I said, God, are you serious? He said, yeah. And I believe he had family over there, maybe a son, or he had some family over there. So anyway, he had retired over there. And I don't think I ever saw him again. Yeah, it was last time, I believe it was last time I saw him. And I know they've had different events up in the Memphis area. You know, everybody's got a Hall of Fame now. I mean, they yeah. really do. You know, it's the yeah. Pennzoil Hall of Fame. You know, it's the whatever Hall of Fame. There's a Hall of Fame.
Yeah.
Uh-huh.
The Jim Valley Hall of Fame. I'll induct you.
I'm in.
You're in.
Do I actually receive something for this prestigious award?
A hearty handshake and a pound of
a hearty handshake.
Yeah, moral and hearty handshake.
Well, it's more than I've received in the past. I haven't even made it into the Memphis Hall of Fame. Here I shave King Waller's head. I can't make it into the Hall of Fame in Memphis. It's funny.
Don't just listen to PW Torch's brand of wrestling coverage. Read it, too, every day at pwtorch.com. Join me Monday nights for my live coverage of Raw, Tuesday nights for my live coverage of SmackDown, Sunday nights for my live coverage of WWE pay-per-views, and keep up on the news and read exclusive editorials and special features every day at pwtorch.com.
You should at least get a booth in his restaurant, one would think, or something.
If they offered it to me now, I wouldn't take it. It's been too long. I said, no, keep it. Give it to somebody else. I don't want it. Seriously, take it down to the local hamburger joint. You know, give it to somebody. Raffle it off.
Hey, you've got an appearance coming up in Myrtle Beach.
Yeah, I do, and I'm pumped about it, too. It's October 28th. It is in Myrtle Beach. My boy Tommy Rich will be there, and this is a kick right here, Jim. I'm going to be a special referee in Tommy's match that particular evening, and that's cool. I think it's very, very cool. They asked me about this and come down and do a meet and greet. And would I be interested in doing it in refereeing? And I thought, well, sure, why not? I guess what they're really saying is you're washed up, idol. You're down to refereeing. Hey, Jimmy, the next thing they're going to ask you to do is put up the ring. And then it'll be popcorn sales. You watch and see. Hey, idol, I hear you're putting the ring up down in Myrtle Beach.
Hey, can you do the 50-50 raffle for us?
Yeah. But anyway, it's cool. It's cool because it's a Halloween fight night, October 28th. It's at 7:00 p.m. And it is, I've been to this venue before when I was down there for Tommy's wrestling school grand opening. It's at the X Gym Sports Complex. And it's on George Bishop Parkway there in Myrtle Beach. Everybody knows where it is. But you talk about a cool place. I mean, it is really super cool. So I'm looking forward to it. And on a little footnote, and I really don't know the particulars about this. I mean, I honestly don't, but I understand there's going to be some kind of an award presentation. I don't know if I'm involved in that or not, but apparently there's going to be some kind of an award presentation that also in that evening. But it's going to be a cool night of professional wrestling. It's really super cool. So people come out there and see some rock and roll professional wrestling.
Now, Austin, you know I'm a big fan of yours. You're one of my favorites to talk to you. I really appreciate the interviews that we have done together. But I have to say, of all the people in wrestling that I would put in as a special referee, I'm not sure that Austin Idol is at the top of my trustworthy list for a special referee, if you know what I'm saying.
No, I don't know what you're saying. I find that that's a little abrasive coming from you. Trustworthy?
I don't know that you're the guy that I'm going to uphold the letter of the law. I don't know what's going to happen in Myrtle Beach, but I'm not getting money on that match. That's for sure. I'm taking that match off the card, off the table. Oh. That's coming off the board.
Jim, hey, come on. You've never known me to do anything. What are you saying? Possibly something unscrupulous? That's not me. No. Now, it was, yes, but no. I'll be down there calling like I see it, shooting straight, and I think it's going to be a lot of fun.
See, now, I'm not sure which is predictable, you doing something unscrupulous or you calling it right down the middle. I don't know.
Yeah, I guess I have a checkered past. No. Yeah, I guess I have a checkered past. Okay, yeah. At least I'm not in denial.
Yeah, I'm just saying, it's like I don't know which would be more shocking: you interfering in the match or you not interfering in the match. So My head is exploding on this. I cannot wrap my head around you as a special guest referee on October 28th at 7 p.m. in Myrtle Beach.
Something sideways here, isn't it?
Yeah. Maybe some kids.
Something is sideways.
Yeah, maybe some people come dressed as Austin Idol for Halloween.
Could, yeah, that's possible, exactly. Oxbaker, if he was still alive, he'd steal their candy. Right?
Oxbaker.
Yeah. Punch him in the mouth and steal their bubble gum, take their candy. That was the Ox, right?
That was the Ox, man. A legend. What a great man. He was so nice.
Oh man, he was an unbelievable guy, and what a character, boy, man, oh man. Hey, did you ever hear my story, Jimmy, about Oxbaker reciting the Mighty Casey? You know the baseball poem.
Tell me about the Casey at bat with Oxbaker.
Yeah, I mean you know that's a very long poem. You know, it was a gloomy day in Mudville, this forest at 4-2, whatever. You know, it was a very long poem, and one day, years and years and years ago. I don't know, we were in a dressing room somewhere, I can't remember where it was, could have been Kansas City, I don't know, Oxbaker, out of nowhere, after the matches, he starts this recital of the Mighty Casey, and you know, he had that big thunderous voice, and man, he's just belting it out, you know, and that big old eyebrows all curled up, and that walrus-looking mustache and that hair all over him like a werewolf. I mean, I just was struck. I mean, just, I mean, totally stopped me like a deer in the headlights to watch him. I mean, and he went through the whole thing. I don't think he missed a beat. I don't think he missed a word. And I thought, oh, man, where did that come from? Where did it come from, you know? And after he did it one time, and I would bump into him every once in a while somewhere, I'd always ask him to do it, and typically he would refuse until I, you know, he finally just, you know, I kept begging him, and thought, okay, I'll give you a few lines. But yeah, Oxbaker, pretty smart guy.
Ox, yeah, he was great. When I saw him a couple of years ago at the Charlotte Fan Fest, I was sure to get a picture with him. That was a couple of years before he passed, but he could not have been nicer. What a nice man.
Very, very nice guy. Yeah, absolutely. Question: I want to ask you something. You knew about Tommy's wrestling school down in Myrtle Beach, right?
I did. I had Tommy on the air promoting it a week or two before you were there. Yeah, and you know, you're talking about what a nice facility it is, and it looks like a really good facility when you consider the history of wrestling schools that are often in garages or worse. The people who sign up for Tommy's school are pretty lucky, one, to have a great teacher, and two, to have a really nice facility.
Yeah, I mean, they've got a tremendous gym. I mean, so that works hand in hand, you know, if you want to, you know, train to be a professional wrestler, it doesn't hurt to be in good condition and, you know, get yourself right, you know, which is, it's a critical thing anyway, whether you're in the wrestling business or any business, you know, take care of yourself. You have one body, you know, it's like your temple, worship it, you know, and I'm a big, you know, I'm a big advocate of health and fitness and nutrition, and I'm sure you've seen some of my stuff, and this is a little bit of a plug, but really it's, in a sense, it's in a way to try to reach out and help people. I mean, you know, I've got a nutrition, a fitness and nutrition booklet, and a workout booklet. It's on my website, austinidalive.com, and I've sold a lot of them. When I was doing my podcast, I don't do it anymore, but when I was doing it, I sold a lot of them. I had tremendous feedback from people who really didn't know what to do, how to lose weight, how to eat properly, what to eat, what not to eat, when to eat, when not to eat. And it's not rocket science. It's really super simple to understand. So, you know, if anybody's interested in, you know, trying to reboot their health or maybe some good advice about what to do in the gym, bang, go to AustinIdolLive.com. It's there. Yeah, so anyway, but that facility there at Tommy's school at the X Sports Complex, it's pretty amazing. It really is pretty amazing. You can do just about anything there.
Couple of things real quick. I think the testimony for your health program and your booklet is just in looking at you, you know, was it last year when we met face-to-face at the Charlotte Fan Fest? I posted pictures up on my Facebook, a lot of fans were like, oh my gosh, Austin Idol looks more like Austin Idol than he has any right to look. I think he still looks remarkably like Austin Idol in his prime. And I think that's a testament to, you know, how well your program and your systems work. So I think that's you know, a lot of times you see on TV, like the infomercials for somebody's fitness or health program, and they have good doctors, good plastic surgeons, better than they have a good program. But I think that your optics definitely prove that you know what you're talking about.
Well, thanks, Jim. I appreciate that, but I take it seriously. But I'm not to the point of being maniacal and being insane and being denying myself of I can't have that. I can't have a slice of that. Or can't. I mean, that's not my thing, because usually when you go, and a lot of people do that. I mean, they think that, oh man, I need to lose 20 pounds, okay, and I can get it off in 2 weeks. By starving myself or cutting my carbohydrates down to zero or 10 carbs. But that's the wrong, it's the wrong approach. And a lot of people don't get it because they just don't understand. I mean, that's what it is. They just don't have the knowledge. And knowledge is power. And it's a knowledge thing. You got to be able to, you got to do the right thing. And especially with eating combination foods, you know, you want a protein source, a fibrous carbohydrate, a complex carb, you know, green leafy veggie. I mean, it's simple. Eat every 2.5-3 hours, and don't eat late, and drink a lot of filtered water. You know, just good stuff. You know what I mean? So it pays off. Taking care of yourself does pay off down the road, and I encourage everybody to take a good hard look at yourself and see if you know, we all need to improve. You know, start with me. I can always improve, but it feels good when you're healthy.
Tell me about it. Well, did you talk about Tommy Rich training? Did you ever train anyone or think about, or did anyone ever approach you about being trained by Austin Idol?
I think so. Years ago that I had some opportunities, but just didn't want to, you know, at the time I didn't want to. I mean, would I, and then I'm asking the question now, would I do it today? Yeah, maybe, you know, if the facility was pretty cool and people were really serious, then maybe do a little something like that. I really don't know, you know, I don't know, but, I know there's a lot of guys out there training people, and it has changed dramatically, but I would say this to anybody who was thinking about getting into the wrestling business and they wanted to get some good training. I would say, don't do what you see on TV. Don't do that, because everybody else is doing it. Don't do that. I mean, you don't have to go totally old school, but old school still works. It still works. And, you know, you look at the ratings now look at WWE's ratings. Look at all the ratings. I mean, they're tanking. They're really tanking. So something's wrong. I mean, what is it? I mean, they don't like what they're seeing. They don't like that content. I mean, it's basically everybody doing the same stuff, Jim, you know, and there's no intrigue. I mean, there's nothing that's, where's that cliffhanger? You know? I mean, where is it? You know, so I think the world of wrestling is really ripe for a change. Matter of fact, you know, I'm friends with Billy Corgan, and you know, Billy just, you know, he just purchased the old NWA brand, and he's going to do something with it. I'm sure of that. He wouldn't have bought it, you know, and he went. I know he went through hoops and hurdles to make that happen, but I would like to see, and Billy and I haven't discussed it. You know, we've had some conversation. We haven't really got into that, you know, but I know he has a penchant for old school. I know he does, you know, and I'm hoping that he'll bring whenever he launches, I hope he brings that back, you know, or certainly a large percentage of it, because I think there's a pent-up demand for it. I really do.
As I examine one of the reasons that I don't watch as much wrestling as I used to, one of the things that I keep coming back to is I think that, and I get that WWE is a billion-dollar corporation and you can't just trust anyone to go out there and ad lib because you never know what they're going to say and it could cost you money or sponsors. I understand that aspect, but I think there is a certain unpredictability that I liked, that I missed, that energy, that anything could happen, and that seems to be missing. It just seems so scripted now, and so, you know, you practically see the strings on the marionettes when they go out there. And I think that aspect is gone, like you talked about with Lance Russell and with Jerry Lawler and stuff from Memphis, for example. You know, that give and take, that real life give and take is gone, and I just don't find it as compelling anymore.
No, you're absolutely right. I mean, that's really well said. You know, if you a football team, I mean, they obviously have coaches that have been in that sport probably for a very, very long time. They know football. I mean, they know football. They may not be the best coaches, but they have, you know, they have a long resume of football. They probably played it, and, you know, I'm sure they did. They played it maybe high school, college, and NFL, but whatever. But in wrestling, you know, you've got people that are, let's just call them coaches, that have never been involved in the sport of wrestling. They don't have a clue. I mean, they don't have a clue. And how do you coach when you don't have experience? I mean, how do you do that? I mean, it's a problem. It's a big problem, and they're paying for it now. I mean, sure, WWE, Vince, I mean, they're all financially done incredibly well, and that's a great thing, but the numbers don't lie, and even though they have a monopoly on the industry, you look at those numbers, they're hideous. I mean, they're really terrible numbers. Look at the Impact Anthem, Impact Wrestling. I mean, God. I mean, I think they dropped out of the top 150 cable shows last week. They didn't crack one to 150. So they're tanking. I mean, so, you know, the numbers don't lie. And there is a lot of people out there, I think they're just kind of fed up, but they don't have anything else to watch. So if they're going to watch wrestling, they don't have a lot of choices.
Well, we'll see what happens.
Yeah, go ahead.
I was going to say, we'll see what happens with Billy Corgan, and I'm sure he has people, but if by chance he needs a really good wrestling announcer, you give him my name. You have my permission to drop my name and number anytime.
Now is this the same guy who was offering me a hearty handshake for the Jim Valley Hall of Fame, and now he wants me to plug him to Billy Corgan? What is wrong with this? Ladies and gentlemen, you're hearing something that I'm hearing?
Well, if I go to work for Billy Corgan, then I would have remuneration for my Hall of Fame, so it all would work out.
I will definitely mention you to him. Do you know Billy at all?
No, I've never met him.
He's a good guy. I mean, he really is. You know, it doesn't make any difference who you are, but, you know, with social media the way it is, Jim, you know, it doesn't make any difference who you are. People, you're going to get bad-mouthed by somebody. It's just the nature of the beast, you know. I don't know if that happens to you because you are such a good guy, but if you're out there, if you're relevant at all, you're going to get a hammer. You're going to get beat up, and there's been some things I've seen about Billy, but I know Billy pretty darn well. He's really a genuine good guy, and he has a tremendous passion for wrestling, so I'm glad to see somebody like himself that is in ownership of the NWA brand that can pump some air back into that balloon. I think he's the guy to do it, so let's hope so.
What can I say? I would trust Austin Idol with his wrestling knowledge. I would trust Austin Idol with his wrestling training knowledge. Not sure I will trust Austin Idol when he's the special guest referee on October 28th at the X Gym facility in Myrtle Beach, South Carolina at 7 p.m. Like I said, I'm puzzled. Are you going to call it down the middle? Are you going to revert to your old ways? You know, I think either way would be shocking, and I'm not sure what's going to happen when you referee that match.
Well, I have to see.
Yeah.
We'll just have to see what happens. So, you know, it just depends on how I feel that day, I guess.
There it is. Well, look, man, I appreciate all of your time. I appreciate our relationship. And as always, if you need anything, if you need anything to get on any channel, you're always welcome to come on and talk. I always enjoy your conversations. You're aces with me, even if I'm not going to pay you to be in my Hall of Fame.
I'm going to have to survive without that payday.
Yeah, the only one.
I'll make it. I'm going to make it, Jim.
All right, my friend. Well, look, I really appreciate your time. Thank you for sharing some memories of Lance Russell. And people can follow you on Twitter at Austin Idol Live.
Yep.
And your website is also Austin Idol Live is the website?
AustinIdolLive.com for the website, yes. And, of course, it's at Austin Idol Live on Twitter, yes.
And you can also follow Wrestler Weekly is the Twitter handle that follows a lot of Tommy Rich's school and things. And that will give you the Twitter for Tommy Rich's school and for Wildfire Tommy Rich. You can follow all the information that's going to be coming out of this big card on the 28th in Myrtle Beach at 7 o'clock.
Sounds great, Jimmy. Sure appreciate the time. It was a blast, as always.
As always, man. Thank you so much. The great Austin Idol joining us here on Wrestling Road Stories. Certainly appreciate his time and his memories of the legendary Lance Russell. What a great guy, Austin Idol. Hey, I want to mention real quick before we move on that I've got a new podcast that I do. It's called Pacific Rim Wrestling. The Pacific Rim Pro Wrestling Podcast. And I do it with legendary Japanese writer, journalist, historian Fumi Saito. And we talk about, it's really a Japan podcast, but it's digestible if you're a casual fan or primarily follow American wrestling. We'll touch base, for example, on All Japan Women's Wrestling and the reunion show they just had. We're going to come up on the upcoming show that's going to be dropping later this week. We're going to talk about Shinsuke Nakamura and some thoughts on Shinsuke that you probably haven't heard anywhere else. Plus, we'll answer your questions on Twitter and on my Facebook. So be sure to find it. We're on iTunes. You can find it on any of your apps. It's Pacific Rim Pro Wrestling. Pacific Rim Pro Wrestling. Find it on my Twitter, at Jim Valley is the link. Or you could also add me on Facebook, at Jim Valley. Just send me a message in case we don't have the same friends. If we have a few similar wrestling friends, then I'll know you listen to the show. But if not, just send me a message so I know you're not a webcam girl, because so many of those annoying webcam girls on Facebook can't handle it. Anyway, it's Pacific Rim Pro Wrestling Podcast. It's Jim Valley. And when we come back, we are going to talk to Lance Russell from 2016. It's I think it's a great, great interview that I did. And it's coming up next as we remember Lance Russell here on Wrestling Road Stories on the PW Torch Livecast with Jim Valley.
We know you're a pro wrestling fan, but you might like MMA too. And if so, check out our sister site, MMATorch.com, with live fight event coverage, including UFC pay-per-views, previews of all UFC and Bellator events, the daily news digest, exclusive columns, flashbacks, and much more. Check it out. If you're a fan of MMA, you'll be a fan of MMATorch.com.
And we're back, Wrestling Road Stories, Jim Valley, PW Torch Livecast. We are recorded this week, but I will be back hopefully live next week. Sorry, Austin Idol, I could only talk during this window, so I had to record the show this week. So I'm sorry it's been recorded, but I am here. I'm not on vacation, I am here. And I think next week we'll have Brian Blair, former Killer B, president of the Cauliflower Alley Club, and an all-around good guy, and hopefully we'll be live next week. Also, don't forget to go to Pacific Rim Pro Wrestling Podcast, the Pacific Rim Pro Wrestling Podcast with me and Fumi Saito. I think you're going to find it to be a very fun, knowledgeable conversation about pro wrestling. And again, we'll talk a lot about history. He can talk about Frank Gotch. He can talk about Ricky Choshu. He can talk about anybody. Shinsuke Nakamura, Ricky Dozan. We can talk about anything. And it's the Pacific Rim Pro Wrestling Podcast. It is on iTunes right now as we speak. So anyway, this is an interview I did in 2016 at Cauliflower Alley in Las Vegas. It's a little over a half hour long. And Shane Russell, Lance's son, was kind enough to set up an interview that I did in my hotel room at Cauliflower Alley with Lance Russell. And this was a big thrill to me. I mean, I've been in broadcasting now for coming up on 30 years, and I've interviewed presidents. I've interviewed a lot of different people. And I have to say, this is one of the highlights, because not only is Lance Russell a legend in wrestling, but he's like a throwback to the golden age of television. And the beginning of, you know, local TV and just, you know, just a different time. And so not only in my mind is he a wrestling legend, but he's also a broadcast legend. And we talk about some of those things, too. So here from 2016 is my interview with the legendary Lance Russell. How did you get into broadcasting? How did it start for you, the beginning of your career?
That was way back in Dayton, Ohio. And I started out, I was in school, high school at the time, and got interested in sports broadcasting. And I mean, that in my mind is what I wanted to do. And I went to work for WING, a radio station in Dayton, Ohio. And I went down, got a job, and they had me around there picking up papers and that kind of stuff. And that's the way I started, and then I moved on to not up but on to Jackson, Tennessee, which was a smaller but a much friendlier place. So,
now growing up, did you have any broadcast idols that you emulated?
Bill Stern, I didn't emulate, but. He was an idol. I thought he was the greatest sounding thing I'd ever heard on there. I don't know whether you ever listened to Bill Stern. I don't think he would have been around. You're too young.
I know, it's funny.
I bet you've heard that from guys like me before.
Well, and now I say it to people. You know, I have friends who are like, you know, oh, geez, kids these days, they don't know who, say, David Bowie is.
Yeah.
And I'm like, well, you know, my generation doesn't know, say, Arthur Godfrey or, you know,
yeah,
whomever.
Yeah,
you know,
right.
And, you know, he was a giant. So, you know.
Yes, he was.
It's just the way kind of life goes.
Nasty one from everything that I ever read about him, but that's all I have to judge it.
Which is funny, because for those who don't know, Arthur Godfrey was like sort of like America's, you know, dad for a while.
That's right.
Very personable,
yep.
Very nice, and, you know, maybe sort of, I don't know, who would be, you know, like a Ward Cleaver kind of a thing, or, you know,
yeah.
Like an Alan Thicke. He was, you know, kind of America's dad for a time in that era. So when did you get to Memphis?
Wow. You know, that's a question I have never been asked before.
Yes!
Good for you, Jim.
1958, Shane. Still, your son Shane is telling me 1958.
Okay, 58.
Yes. One question you've never been asked. Awesome. So I guess what I want to get at is one of the things that on my show that I talk about is how broadcasting and wrestling have sort of paralleled each other. When television exploded in the 50s nationally, wrestling was there, and then when it went back locally, and I think that's where you tie in, where, you know, TV stations, you'd have all local programming. You'd have the local talk show. You'd have the local host for movies and maybe a local game show. And you had, you know, it was the local television station was tied into the community, and you were local. You were more than just local celebrities. People also felt like they knew you.
Yes.
That's
true.
Yeah, talk about that. And the different, you did different jobs as far as shows you hosted and things, right?
Yes, that's true, too. And it was a situation where it became necessary in my mind to get myself into that mode. The fact that people see you and they speak to you, it doesn't necessarily mean that they know you. It's because they have seen you on. And And I was always aware of what a power that was, and used to, and I was selling in my earlier days too, that was one of the great things about television, is that you could make an owner of a business a personal friend of the guy sitting out there watching it, if you said the right things and did the right thing. A very important thing.
Well, and your warm personal style also probably drew people in and made people feel like they knew you, and I think it added to your persona and your credibility, which we'll get into. Talk about some of the shows that you hosted, that some of the programs that you did prior to being associated with Championship Wrestling.
Wow, I wish I could remember the name of that. It was in a little town in Piqua, Ohio. Piqua. And it was in the midday. It was a telephone quiz show. I mean, an opportunity to call people up and ask them questions, literally. And any question that was the question of the day. And you would just call numbers and get to talk to people about there. And the whole playoff was to play off of their answers to them, and maybe it would lead you into something that was more intriguing or better or funnier or something. And that's what we used that for, and that was a really popular show too. So I can't remember the time. That was a long time ago.
You know, it's fascinating, all the tools that we have today and all the different online and mobile phone applications that engage with people. And you know, I came from radio, and a lot of people now see radio as old and antiquated, but so many of the skills and so many of the things that you do in radio or with, you know, with a simple phone line and a black and white TV camera, it's all really the same.
Yeah.
Communicating is communicating, and you know, you got to keep people engaged, and you know, don't go too long, don't go over, you know, it's all really the same.
Yeah, I think you make a good observation right there, Jim. It is in some ways is still magnificent to me what you can do with radio and contacting people and getting to know people.
So what were you doing when they first approached you about Championship Wrestling?
We'll just leave out the championship part of it. And I was in Jackson, Tennessee, and that was down in the land of Nick Gulas and Roy Welch. And all of that started with Roy Welch, whose nickname among the wrestlers was Bag Ears. Because he had, my son and I were talking about that just the other day, about Bag Ears and how did he go with that. I said, that was a badge of honor for him. His ears, I've never seen, and that's what Shane was making a reference to, is bad. Roy had the worst set of ears that I believe I have ever run across in wrestling or boxing or anything else. And Bag Ears is what they call him. And that describes what Roy Welch's ears were like. And so that's where I started off in wrestling, working with them. And that came when the station moved in a live wrestling show on Saturday night. The owner of the television and radio show stations that I was working for, WDXI, TV in radio, they had purchased I can't think what you call them. They built a jillion of them after the World War II to live in and to be school buildings and round shape.
Yeah, almost like a hangar type structure.
Yeah. And so there was a lot of that particular building, and right now I've forgotten where I was at. That happens.
So that's where you set up with the wrestling.
Yeah.
So what was your, had you been exposed at all to wrestling prior to this first indoctrination?
In Ohio is where I first, from Dayton, Ohio, and that was when I was I used to work in the auditorium there, and all of the programs that came to town, and once a month, wrestling came in. And so that's where I first started watching some pretty doggone good wrestling, I'm telling you, in Dayton, Ohio. It was very, very high class and really the most colorful and, well, maybe not as colorful as they're doing them today, but flying...
lots of action.
Yeah.
Lots of action. So what was... wrestling is I love wrestling. You love wrestling. Everybody here in Las Vegas loves wrestling, but sometimes people don't have the best impression of of wrestling.
Sure. My wife used to be sensitive to that when I started doing that, and people would say, "Oh, you're the wrestling guy," you know, and it's I mean, she had to get used to that. That's peculiar when your wife is suspicious of you.
Yeah, my wife doesn't go to wrestling. When she was my girlfriend, she went to wrestling. But now that she's my wife, doesn't. I don't know why. I have no idea why that is. I just don't know. So how did you work to keep? I mean, you were a news personality. You know, you were the program director and managed the station and things. How did you was it ever an issue to deal with managing your credibility? Dealing with, you know, your professional life and then also being associated with professional wrestling and some of the crazy characters and things that happen in wrestling?
I think, yes. The answer to that is yes. It was in both sides of the fence that I would have people who just resented. And why do you have that on the air? I mean, what is being gained usefully out of having that show on the air? And then you had the people who said, "Oh, we've been waiting," and so forth. They were so tickled and all. It was a real polar experience with wrestling.
And it was huge. When did you realize getting involved? Like, how big was it? Was it, you know, when Jackie Fargo or who? What really opened your eyes? You're going, "Wow, this area loves wrestling."
Well, Jackie Fargo was. Before I really started, I was not the first wrestling announcer in the town. A man that I worked with was probably the best announcer that I ever worked with. His name was Charlie Sullivan, and he worked on the NBC station. I was working on the ABC station at the time. And so I walked into... Everybody who ever said, "I like wrestling," knew Charlie Sullivan. He was just, he was a home daddy to them. And Charlie probably had more influence on me changing my style. I think I was more trying for electricity and excitement and, you know, and I did high school football, and Lord knows that's very exciting for the families that have the kids that are playing it. But it was a definite change in from a more excited delivery back to just straight natural talking about it. And
As I told you, I didn't get to see you in your prime, but I saw you on YouTube now. And I was a kid when cable TV exploded in the 80s, so I was exposed to Gordon Solie and everyone.
Yeah.
And I actually, you know, just real quick, my background, you know, I went to the WWE in about 10 years ago and did an audition. So I have some experience in broadcasting and wrestling announcing. And now where I'm going with this is that now that I see you on YouTube, it's like, I think that you are better than people give you credit for. I think you're the best announcer for wrestling.
That's very nice.
And you may not call all the moves, and I think too many people put too much emphasis on calling the moves, but you express the action, and more importantly, you told the story as far as, you know, who these people are, what their motivations are, and also I think what's great is you talk about in very general terms that people can understand, you know, oh, there's a size difference here, or there's an experience difference here. And I think that helped the enhancement guys,
mm-hmm.
you know, the underneath guys, because, you know, they're not losers. They're just inexperienced guys who don't have it put together yet in their careers.
Yeah. Well, that, I guess I'm glad. Boy, you got a great eye for picking up details like that, Jim. That's interesting to hear you put it that way. And
was that intentional?
Huh?
Did you do that intentionally?
I think so. Yeah. It was something that was necessary to do in order to get across the picture of it, is to play on a guy's inexperience and what he might do, might slip into a side headlock of some kind without even be aware of it if he didn't have his head pressed in the right position where he could resist somebody slipping an arm around his head and squeezing.
You love pro wrestling podcasts, but you might not have time to listen to all of them. We'll help you decide which ones to listen to and keep you up to date on the ones you're missing at pwpodcasts.com. That website features written recaps of all of the top pro wrestling related podcasts, including Steve Austin, Bruce Pritchard, Edge and Christian, and so on. Check it out. It's pwpodcasts.com, your home for written recaps of all pro wrestling personality hosted podcasts.
Did you ever have to do preparation for the show? Or did you and Dave Brown just knew each other well enough and you could wing it?
I had the advantage on Dave in experience, like we're talking about inexperience and other things, but and Dave was he wasn't far behind because he was a fast learner and a hard worker, and my goodness, that was an important thing as far as I was concerned, somebody that was really interested. And Dave, when he started, was not interested, except in the fact of when he came to me and I went to him to see. He was working under me as a staff announcer, and I went to Dave and said, I lost the guy that is helping me on the wrestling thing. Would you be interested in coming in with me and working as a color man on the wrestling team? And he said, well, that's not really what I had in mind. And I said, Dave, let me tell you one thing. If you do wrestling, I will tell you at the end of the year, you will have more experience of dealing with more various emotional things as the time goes along that you would ever get if you spent all of your time as a newsman or as a weatherman or something like that. And I said, if you ever planned on using television as a vehicle to make a living, my suggestion to you is that you take this job because you will learn an awful lot from it. And Dave said that was probably the best piece of advice he ever got anywhere, anytime in broadcasting. And he turned out to be, obviously, now we look back after all of the polls and all that they do about the personalities doing the news block, Dave in the Memphis area is just by and large the dominant number one personality there.
And it's something you don't really get anymore with so much diversification of media and everything is so siloed. So one thing that I was curious about with your career is at some point, did you leave the TV station and go work specifically for Jarrett Promotions?
Yes. I went to work for Jerry Jarrett. It came in a turmoil position where Jarrett Promotion, Roy Welch and Nick Goulas, I mentioned to you earlier, were the dominant forces. They did the promoting in the South. And Nick had been from Birmingham, and Roy had been from up around Arkansas and West Tennessee and all. And so when Jarrett came in, he came in as a Goulas-Welch employee, and he bright, and he had a marvelous idea for picking up things that would be good broadcast flavor and get with people, and it became a competition, and he went to battle against Welch and Gulison Welch, and he won hands down. Thank goodness for him, because he knew me, because I was working for the station and made no bones about it. My interest is in developing money for the station, and we had a higher than average cost per thousand on spots that were sold in the wrestling thing because our audience was bigger. And so it became a flat out them, that is Gulus Welch, against the Jarrett promotion. And Jarrett won it hands down and didn't take 3 weeks. And Gulus was on another station and out of business, as a matter of fact.
I read Jerry Jarrett's book not that long ago, and mm-hmm. one of the things that I don't know, kind of struck me as odd, and if you don't want to talk about this, that's fine, where he talks about where, you know, as history of wrestling shows, that usually the top star and the promoter eventually butt heads, and I think, you know, Jerry built that nice house, from what I understand, and Jerry Lawler was like, oh, what's going on here? And he thought about breaking away, and I guess he came to you about possibly breaking away.
Yes.
They made a deal.
Yes.
And in the book, Jerry talks about, well, I couldn't punish Jerry Lawler, so I had to punish Lance Russell. And I thought, well, I guess business is business, but I thought, you know, giving a guy in your position and all the things you've done in championship wrestling, it kind of struck me as, I don't know, a little just different. Was there a rough patch there for you and Jerry in your relationship?
Jerry Jarrett. Yeah, I think you could say that.
It's water under the bridge, but I was just kind of surprised that he didn't.
I hope it's under the bridge, but I'm not sure.
I was just kind of surprised that, I don't know, the way he wrote it and everything, it just kind of struck me, I guess.
Yeah, well, it struck me, too, when I was working with him. We didn't get along at all at that time. It suddenly changed, and he started saying things about me and my trustworthiness, and that really, really tore me up because I never had anybody question my word or anything before, and it was. And so Jerry and I are not on the best of terms, to put it. And
okay, I didn't know that.
So,
I'm sorry.
Yeah, that's true.
So let's talk about some good stuff. You know, obviously everyone knows about your work with Jerry Lawler. Like when Jimmy Hart left Memphis.
Yes.
And they did the bit where he dumped a bag of flour
he
on
did,
your
in
head.
Fact.
Did you know that was coming?
Not to that extent. Never did I have any idea. I thought he would take like a handful of flour and throw it at me. He took the whole bag and pa-pow, and I was dumb enough. If you can imagine being that old and still forgetting something that I knew that my mama said, water and flour will get you well on the way to glue. And when Jimmy hit me with that covered up bag, whole bag of flour, we had a shower, of course, back in the back there of downstairs, and I ran back and I got in the shower to get off as much of the stuff, and all I did was successfully start on making glue, Mama. And it was terrible. It was just an awful feeling, and I wanted to kill Hart right on the spot. But it turned up, it gave me a good excuse to fire him, to get rid of him. And they gave him, he didn't have any place to go, of course, tongue in cheek, because he had all this set up that he wanted to get fired and he wanted to get away from, and so he went
to New York after
yes,
that.
Yes, he did.
Was there anybody that you thought that on Saturday morning that you had a particularly good repertoire with that was fun to play off of? Anybody?
Jerry Lawler. Yeah. Lawler was the number one player that I ever went with in wrestling, I mean, in broadcasting. And Jerry was just exceptional in a lot of ways. And, you know, that's not fair. Oh, you're favoring him. Oh, yeah? He's lucky. I mean, the rest of the guys are lucky that some of them were and some of them weren't, because Jerry was just an exceptional individual. He just had not only the physical thing, he never has had a drink of whiskey. He's a guy who did not carouse and do all the things that wrestlers are accused of, whether they're guilty or not, by the public. And Lawler never was that way.
One of the guys who I don't know that he went too many places outside of Memphis that I really thought was had a lot of charisma and a lot of ability was Troy Graham, Dream Machine. And
yeah, Dream Machine.
You could pat him off and say that, you know, he was kind of a Dusty Rhodes ripoff, but really, you know, there's some similarities. But he really kind of was his own guy. He said a lot of creative things, and I think he's kind of one of those undiscovered Memphis guys.
Yeah, but you're right. You boy, you got a good eye, man. You like to act like you've been around wrestling a little while.
I've wasted a lot of time.
No, it's not all wasted.
Oh, so you want to come in? Here's your son. Your son Shane. Shane.
I got a great story about Troy Graham. I was just with Jimmy Hart last week, and we were just talking about some old wrestlers. And I said we were talking about the time when Troy jumped you.
Oh,
and he
yeah.
goes, you know how Troy got in the business? He says, one morning we were looking for a wrestler to fill in because we were short on Saturday morning. He went out back, and there were usually some guys standing out back. And he went up to Troy Graham and said, hey, have you ever wrestled before? You ever been on a mic? And he said, Troy started whipping off some of his great rhymes. And he said, you're hired. Come on in.
Hey, before you go away, Shane Russell, your Lance's son, what was it like to have your dad
and manager?
Oh, what was it like to have your dad? You know, on TV. You know, the kids at school. You know, seeing things like, you know, Jimmy Hart or, you know, whatever happened on TV. What were some of the reactions growing up?
Well, I was always very well known in grade school, and the kids always would want to, you know more about wrestling and dad and some of the wrestlers. And so I got a little bit of respect. I didn't get beat up any, so that was always good. But, you know, thanks to Jerry Lawler, you know, I was known as Banana Nose Jr. because I do have that trademark nose. So. But, yeah, no, it was great. I can very vividly remember as a kid going down early on Channel 13 studios and sitting up on the side and watching the early days with Don and Al Green and Tojo and Jackie Fargo and, you know, all those guys way back, and it was just a great time.
Was there ever a time, I mean, when you were a kid, were you smart to the business, or did you know?
You know, early on, I had no idea. I thought it was all, you know, all legit, and then eventually, you know, I got older and wiser, and it was an exciting time back then.
Was there ever a time when you were worried about your dad's well-being on TV?
Yeah, early on it was because back in those days, I think some of the guys would love to try to get you or get a shot at you or tear
just
your suit.
A little bit of a shot would do for some of them, man. So fortunately, that was.
True. Now, my mom was the one who got real upset when the blood would get on his suit or they'd tear his suit. I mean, that was his suit, so we had to pay for it.
glamorous wrestling. Now, let's say that you have to put something in a time capsule.
Yes, sir.
One moment from championship wrestling. What do you think is your favorite moment or the quintessential championship wrestling moment?
Well, now that may be two different things because there's some moments that were just absolutely hilarious, but I wouldn't call that a characteristic of all wrestling for sure, because we found out when I went to WCW and went down with Turner Broadcasting and got down there, I ran into, can you believe that there were people who didn't think that I was a nice nice, quiet Southern boy or anything like that. There were other guys from other areas that were working in there with him that I ran into, and they didn't like me because I was the guy in Memphis that did things a little different than most of the guys.
Memphis kind of had a stigma, even in the wrestling world, which is crazy.
I thought it was, and I was indignant about it because they just, a couple of them guys.
As I watch Memphis wrestling now, it's like so much of what they do today, well, not exactly, and it's different, but so much of what is done today is transferred over to Memphis, where you've got to be a well-rounded performer, you've got to be able to do a little comedy, you've got to be able to wrestle, you've got to be able to be serious. So much of what I see in quote-unquote sports entertainment, I think, came from Memphis.
Yeah, well, I think that's another great observation, Jim. I think it's absolutely true. And this is the thing that I say, well, all you guys, all you do is laugh. Well, when we worked in a rural area and we're doing spot shows out away from the Memphis Coliseum, which was an 11,000 seat holder, and we put 11,000 in there many times. When we went out into the rural area, we got people that were a little more earthy, if you want to use that old term. And I believe me, and I mean this, and I'm happy with it and proud of them. These people were more country, some of them, but bless it, they were good, solid people. And people that I consider friends of mine today, a lot of them. When I go to a meet and greet somewhere out and go to the Memphis area, that's where I want to go, is out in the area. And it's just amazing what a difference in some places. So we started with the premise that Jarrett says they pay just as much to laugh at what they're looking at as they do to cry or pull back in fear or something like that. And so if that's what they want to do and we're doing something that they think is funny, then great, let them chuckle. And so, that's why, because in so many parts of the country at that time, Jim, they were working so hard to make certain that nobody had the word fake involved with any of it, that they didn't have their minds on reality and what would happen, and what if somebody said that to your wife. And that's the way Jerry Jarrett thought. I give him credit. I mean, let me tell you, don't mistake anything that I might have said about us having our differences in there with respect and the talent that guy had. He's the best I ever saw in that respect. And the next best right along with him was Jerry Lawler as a wrestler, and think that wasn't valuable to have a guy with that kind of imagination working in the ring. And when he pulled that strap down, then you knew he had come up with something in his mind that he was ready to execute, because he would go from there to trigger the move that set up how the result was going to be, the end result was going to be.
You guys did a lot of things on a shoestring budget without, the highest priced talent in the world. I mean, that's an amazing accomplishment, that you produced so much content that, generated so much revenue and generated so much interest in the community. But, rather than having to bring in, every major star, you created a lot of stars. You maybe one week Dirty Rhodes would be Dirty Rhodes, and the next week he'd be under the mask as a medic or what have you. I mean, you guys did a lot of things with very little bit, and that's show business.
You're right. I mean, that's exactly it, and that's what ours was. I mean, recognize it, friend. We're not the top dollar place in the world in wrestling in there, and so we got to get along on what we got. And you hit it right on a button. I mean, they had every kind of job lined out for everybody that worked there. And that's one thing that made it great, because you had well-rounded guys. And this is why I thought that when I went down to WCW, that there were these guys that having problems with me. I had problems with them because they had never worked under conditions as varied as the condition that I had worked under.
Yeah, and I think, you know, looking down on Memphis doesn't make any sense considering when you saw some of the stuff that WCW did, but that's another story for another time.
Right.
Okay, real quick, we'll wrap it up here. Give us like one favorite championship wrestling memory that you enjoyed that warms your heart. What did you love?
Well, this one is, at the time I didn't enjoy it, because I didn't know what the outcome of it was going to be. This is when our equipment failed. That is to say, the wrestling ring broke in the middle, and the canvas went down in it, and we kept wrestling, babe. And the guys would get around the edge of that crater, and they would jump down into that hole, and you could see their arms flailing up above the level of the floor in there, because the whole canvas had caved in, and it was amazing to see those guys continue to do what they did and make a most interesting wrestling show as it was.
Lance Russell, 90 years old, still going, and an amazing career, a legend in broadcasting and in professional wrestling. Thanks so much for your time. I appreciate
it. Okay, Jim, thank you for having me. I really enjoyed it. I love your observations. You're good.
When Lance Russell said that I was good, oh my gosh, one of the highlights of my career. So there it is, from 2016 to Cauliflower Alley, an interview with Lance Russell, the legend. Rest in peace, Lance, one of the greatest of all time, and in my opinion, the greatest of all time, and I kind of outlined why I think that. Hey, remember when I told you Brian Blair was going to be here next week? Oh my gosh, I'm sorry. I'm a little thrown off because I had to put the show together at the last minute, but next week we've got a huge show. I'll tell you in like 30 seconds. Stay right there.
Support what we do here at the PW Torch Livecast when you shop Amazon. Simply go to pwtorch.com/Amazon. We've simplified the page. There's a big Amazon logo. You click on it. It takes you right to Amazon's homepage. But because of that small detour, we get credit for your visit, and we get a commission on anything you buy on that shopping trip. That's pwtorch.com/Amazon. Thank you very much for your support.
Wrestling Road Stories with Jim Valley, each and every Wednesday. Here on the PW Torch live cast, 5 o'clock on the East Coast of the United States, 2 o'clock where I'm at here on the shores of Lake Washington. Now, next Wednesday, we will be live. And next Wednesday, I can't believe this. Oh, it slipped my mind. I'm sorry. It's been such a busy week. I apologize. But next week, the return of my girlfriend. Very excited. You remember her from WrestleMania 10. You remember her from Spaceballs, but probably most of all, you remember her from USA's Up All Night. The lovely, the talented, the great entrepreneur and comedian, Rhonda Shear, is going to be back here next week. Remember, Rhonda Shear was here on the old Saturday show last year, year and a half, 2 years ago, something like that, and she was great. So we'll talk to Rhonda Shear. She's got a new book out. It's called Up All Night. And we'll talk about her time in wrestling, her time with The Click and Shawn Michaels, and her time at WrestleMania 10, and just all of that stuff. And last time she was on, she had a lot of observations about wrestling. And as a matter of fact, the last time she was on, she said that she was still writing her book. And she said that the interview that we did with her, that I had with her, it was going to inspire her to go back and add more wrestling, more WWF from the mid-90s back into her book. So we'll find out if she did indeed do that next Wednesday. So be sure to tell the friends wake the neighbors, tweet it out, send it out on Facebook that next Wednesday, here on Wrestling Road Stories, live on the PW Torch Livecast, we are going to have Rhonda Shear back on the show talking her career in comedy, her career in movies, her time in wrestling, and also she is a very successful entrepreneur now with women's fashion and women's lingerie and underwear and things like that, like unmentionables. I don't know what you call it. But anyway, she's very successful. She's got like bank. So good for her, and we'll have her on next Wednesday, and we'll talk to her here on the PW Torch Livecast. Well, that's the show. I hope you enjoyed it. Hope you send it out. And also, don't forget, later this week, I will be on the Pacific Rim Wrestling Podcast, the new podcast with Fumi Saito. We talk about wrestling history, talk about Japan and the connection here to the United States. It's a great podcast. Fumi is incredibly knowledgeable, and I know you will enjoy it. So find it on iTunes. It is Pacific Rim Pro Wrestling Podcast, or follow me on Twitter at Jim Valley or on Facebook at Jim Valley, and that way you can find the Pacific Rim Pro Wrestling Podcast. Rhonda Shear here next week. We will see you here on Wrestling Road Stories on the PW Torch Livecast. See ya!
PW Torch Livecast listeners, I invite you to get even more of what the Torch offers by becoming a PW Torch VIP member. Not only do you get ad-free access to our website, the mobile site, and the desktop site, and access to about 30 years of our archives, including over 1,500 back issues and thousands upon thousands of hours of our audio shows going back to 2004, plus tons of retro radio shows from the 1990s. But you also get over 15 VIP exclusive podcasts per week, in addition to ad-free editions of these PW Torch livecasts throughout the week. So we take the ads out of the PW Torch livecast for VIP members and then give you over 15 other podcasts per week, including what started it all, the Bruce Mitchell Audio Show. I host that with Bruce every weekend, and we spend a couple hours talking about the biggest stories of professional wrestling and wrestling history. It's one of the longest-running weekly pro wrestling podcasts on any subject, and it's one of the main reasons people go VIP and stay VIP. Another is The Fix with Todd Martin. I host that every midweek with Todd, and we get Todd's expertise and opinions every midweek on current events in professional wrestling, not just WWE, but all promotions worldwide, including New Japan. Plus, we end every show with some expert MMA talk from the LA Times columnist and Sure Talk contributor, Todd Martin. And there's so much more. The Every Single Day Weight Cutter Hotline with news updates every single day, Monday through Friday. And every Saturday and Sunday, I do the SE Editor format of the Weight Cutter Hotline, where I answer VIP member questions in depth. And there's so much more. There's the Wayback Playback with Pat McNeil and Jim Valley, Wrestling Audio Community with Sean Radican, the WWE Future Pass Show with scouting reports on prospects and a look back at the indie career of current stars, the PW Torch East Coast Cast Extended VIP Edition, the retro radio shows. Every Thursday, a new retro radio show from the 90s drops, from the early 90s or the Attitude Era. And last but not least, my in-depth Raw and SmackDown reports. You can get a full chronological rundown of every episode of Raw and SmackDown with my analysis of the show in-depth every Monday night and Tuesday night. So check out details at pwtorch.com/govip. We give you a lot here at the livecast, but there is so much more. The vast majority of our work is for our VIP members, and you can become one today. Go check out details on a subscription at pwtorch.com/govip. This is love.